Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry. Clean feel all day.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Put it all together.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Kyrie Irving decides, you know what? I don't think I'm going to get that money elsewhere. I'll just go back. Durant says, you know what? I'm out. I'll just go back.
Earlier on the show, Falcons head coach Arthur Smith. Coming up, 15-time hot dog eating contest champion Joey Chestnut. 4-time Oscar nominee, author and director Michael Mann. Patriots safety Devin McCourty. Senior NBA insider for The Athletic, Shams Charania. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air right here on NBC. Oh, pardon me. I knew I'd do that. Right here on YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show. The number of times I would go on NFL Network in the beginning days of NFL Network and say,
welcome,
this is SportsCenter. I did it all the time. That's 2 years after Peacock. I knew I would do it every now and then. But we're not on Roku yet. That's going to come in September. The Roku channel is free, and you can get it for free on any Roku device. If you got a smart TV from Samsung, it's sitting right there, and the Roku channel is free. The same on an Amazon Fire TV, that is free. You download the Roku app on a mobile device, it is free to download, and so is the Roku channel to watch on your mobile device. And then if you are sitting in an office, we had so many people saying, hey, it's too bad you moved to Roku because I love watching you at work. Well, we're assuming you're doing that on a desktop. And the Roku channel is available at therokuchannel.com, and it's free there too. And we're starting in September. We'll give you the exact date in short order. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on this program. The director of the brilliant movie Heat in 1995, here in 2022, Michael Mann decided to write and publish a sequel. Heat 2 is the number one bestseller atop the New York Times novel best-selling list. And he is going to be joining us in about 15 minutes time right here on the program. Shams Charania will be joining us in hour number three. He's the one that first popped out there the news that everything was back in order in Brooklyn, that Durant was no longer demanding a trade, and he's back. And Shams will be joining us in the studio, at the top of hour number three to tell us how that happened and what the Nets said to Durant. And then coming up after him, Devin McCourty steps off of the practice field in Las Vegas, where the Patriots are getting set to take on the Raiders, and they're practicing together. McDaniels and Belichick can't quit each other. They can't quit each other.
Never.
And so that is another order of business that will be discussed with Devin McCourty when he joins us in just about an hour plus time. So we kick off hour number two, recapping our top story from yesterday. Somebody at Yankee Stadium drank a beer through a hot dog. That was our top story yesterday. This gentleman decides to pop a hole in the top and bottom of a hot dog using a straw, doesn't waste the innards, sucks them out. Even though he doesn't use the straw, he uses the hot dog to drink the beer. And a lot of people think it's fake, but you could see some of the beer going down. You could see some of the beer going down a little bit. You see the beer going down, but you yesterday, Jason Feller, took the approach that drinking the beer through a hot dog using the beer as a makeshift straw was, in fact, genius. We put up the poll question, is this man a madman or a genius? And the final results of that was
a blowout. Finally came through, 82% madman, over 3,000 votes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you, Jason Feller, said, you know what? I think it's genius. I'm going to try it tonight.
Yes.
At home. And at that point in time, chiming in from his home where he works expertly handling the digital process of the Rich Eisen Show, which is anybody who sees all these videos on YouTube right here as soon as it's over, they don't get done unless Sean Mitchell's handling it. And Sean Mitchell decided to try it himself. He said, I'm going to do it in Dodger Stadium. He's going to do it in an actual Major League Baseball stadium. And I predicted you can't do it with a Dodger dog. Now, people here in Los Angeles love their Dodger dogs to the point of they're mad. They're madmen about it. They're crazy. If you ever say the Dodger dog isn't all that.
Oh, they go nuts.
Los Angeles, people think that.
Oh, blasphemous.
You might as well change Staples to crypto. That's how they handle it. Like, it's an affront to them. And I said, you know, a Dodger dog is too thin and the bun around it is too, it's kind of like wet. Like the heat of the wrapping just totally makes it thin and it makes it very difficult. I said, you're not going to get it done. So here's a video. Sean Mitchell, you could see it. The hot dog's already falling apart. The straw is like midway through and he tries to jam it through and then it comes out the middle and he couldn't even get halfway there. Blame it on the straw, blame it on the hot dog, but he just decided we're not doing it. And I'll be honest with you, for those on the radio, it looks like a freaking catheter. It just doesn't look good at all, honestly. And you shouldn't turn baseball fans into urologists on the spot. So he just aborted the mission. Over.
Over, done.
You, however, Mr. Feller, you created the video, but you didn't show us punching the top and the bottom of your hot dog that you boiled. You boiled the hot dog?
I boiled it, yeah.
Okay, you boiled the hot dog. And here is the result of Jason Feller having already punctured the wiener, by the way, which is, I do believe, the second album after Smelling the Glove by Spinal Tap. This is the fruits, if you will, of Jason Feller's labor.
All right, so this is take two, because it turns out that it's not that easy to push the straw through, and that guy was been a pro. So I got my Hebrew Nationals here, sticking with the tribe, and a Heineken. So, second attempt here, the first one I got nothing out of here.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Hard to watch. And so once gross. Again, there's nothing coming through here, so... It feels disgusting. It's starting to taste disgusting. And it is disgusting. So I don't need to do this ever again. Thank you for watching.
There you go. That's your TED Talk right there. Thanks for coming to the J Talk. So no longer genius, right?
No.
You don't think it's genius anymore?
Not at all. Horrible. I think it's fake.
You think it's fake?
Yeah. It was so hard to get that straw through there. Took multiple straws.
This guy just popped it in, but it was much thinner. You guys used much thicker straws. This guy, it seemed like one of those like stirrers from a coffee cup. I don't know if it's in the, it could be in the hand motion. It could just be, maybe this guy's a surgeon. Maybe he's just used to using his hands delicately. I don't know. But all I know is the man used a hot dog as a straw. And when we talked about this on the show yesterday, we were saying we need one man's opinion on whether this is a foul, if this is, in fact, a blasphemous use of the hot dog. The man who is the champion of planet Earth of consuming hot dogs in the shortest amount of time, the champion eater, right, Chris Brockman? Correct?
He is the greatest competitive eater in the history of mankind.
Joey Chestnut here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Joey?
Doing good. Good to be on with you.
Okay, so did you see this video of this gent using the hot dog as a straw and sucking a beer through it? Have you seen this video, Joey Chestnut?
Oh, I've seen it. I was shocked and amazed also.
Okay.
But, it's ridiculous.
Okay, so what is your thoughts, sir, as a man who has made his name on many foods, competitively eating them, but the hot dog being the one that's you're most known for? Your thoughts on the use of the hot dog in this manner is what, Joey?
Oh, it's just because he can do it doesn't mean he should be allowed to. It's just because he might have those special hands that can do it. It's ridiculous. And, oh my God. I mean, I've eaten some gross things, and I've eaten hot dogs in weird ways, so I don't judge people very often, but that's out of line.
Have you ever used a hot dog for anything other than just eating it, Joey?
No, I haven't used it to help me eat other things, but yeah, it's, Dang it, man. I catch myself because I do eat weird things. I dunk the buns in water to help them go down fast.
Yes, you do.
So it's hard for me to... I usually don't cast judgment, but it's still wrong.
So,
it's still wrong to use it as a straw.
So if instead of... it, that was our poll question yesterday. Genius, madman. Is this guy a genius or a madman? You would have voted what?
Oh, madman.
I don't know. So is the competitive eating world up in arms over this, Joey Chestnut? Is it?
I don't think we're up in arms.
So up in gullet? Are you up in gullet over it? Is that what it is? Up in esophagus over it?
It's not,
Joey.
It's not turning our stomachs or anything. I think it's going to go away. I'm a little bit curious. I kind of want to know what the beer tasted like going through the hot dog straw.
Will you do this for me then, Joey? If even though you have said you're offended by it. Would you attempt it? Would you at least attempt it, video it, and send it to us so we could see Joey Chestnut do it and tell us your opinion of whether, in fact, you've had your opinion changed or not? Will you do that, Joey, for us?
Yeah, you know, I'll give it a go. I'm going to a Cubs game tonight.
So you're going to do it in Wrigley Field? You're going to do it in Wrigley Field?
I'll do it in Wrigley Field.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Can you have to send it to us at Rich Eisen Show, and then we will see. And you gotta include your thoughts. You gotta include your thoughts if this works or not. If this is something that you would endorse, a Joey Chestnut blue check mark or not. Will you do that for us, please?
Okay. You know what? This is the way to do it. I shouldn't knock it without trying it. And yeah, I'm gonna give it a go.
Well, do yourself a favor. Take your time. Don't rush it. Okay. Take your time. There's no contest here. We just needed to, again, we've attempted it, and it might just be the straw being the issue. And I don't think clearly it'll be your intake. That won't be the issue. You've never seemed to have a problem with that. But we need to see that, Joey.
Maybe if I can cut the straw at an angle, and that way I can kind of rotate it to almost saw through it.
See, you're the genius. You're the professional, clearly. Right here. That's not a bad idea, because then it can actually get in there. Interesting.
Yeah, like it's like a needle. Like you wouldn't have a needle that doesn't have an angle on it.
Oh man, 15-time Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest winner, the greatest champion competitive eater of all time, Joey Chestnut. You are going to attempt this in Wrigley, in the friendly confines. Oh, I mean, what are the play?
What
an iconic
better?
Spot!
What place?
An iconic spot. Are you a Cubs fan, or are you just in Chicago?
I'm just going to Chicago. Yeah.
What are you eating there?
What am I doing? I'm judging a hamburger cooking contest, and they're pairing the hamburgers with a Sutter Home wine. So
okay,
we're gonna. I'm gonna be eating burgers, drinking wine, and then eating a hot dog as a straw.
I love it. This will be great. So you know, I have just a couple questions for you, Joey Chestnut. I've always wondered. Now that I have an opportunity here, so when you just go out to dinner. Do you have the urge to eat it fast, or can you actually savor a meal? Can you do that, Joey?
It's weird. Like I'm not eating like contest speed, but I'm definitely eating a little bit faster. It's like a race car driver driving on a nice road.
Right.
They're not going to drive exactly the speed limit. They like the way the car feels. They like the way the road feels.
Okay.
They're going to go faster. I like to eat. And when it's tasting good, it's going to go down fast.
Okay, so you can't. So it's do you have difficulty savoring what you're sitting there and eating? What about this?
Yeah.
Sorry, Joey. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm never going to let the food get cold.
Understood.
I'll slow down for restaurant situations.
What about?
Socially,
you're a socially decent eater, is what you're saying. Socially.
Yeah, I can hold back.
That said, Joey, let's say you are you married, Joey?
I'm engaged.
You're
engaged.
Okay. Okay, engaged again. Okay, very good. Don't rush the altar, obviously. So let's just say you and your fiance having a meal, your food comes first. Do you wait for the food to arrive for your fiance before you start, or do you just see it and you just got such a Pavlovian reaction, you got to consume it on the spot, Joey?
No, I'm a gentleman. I'll definitely wait.
A professional and a gentleman. Joey Chestnut.
Yeah.
Okay, those are other issues I have. Questions. Another one is there anything you won't eat competitively? Something you're just like, I just will not do it. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Every year there's a contest in New Orleans, one of the best cities in the world, and I want to go to it, but it's raw oysters, and I just can't bring myself to it.
Is it the consistency? Is that what it is?
It's the consistency, the salt, and just the thought. I mean, I can have a couple oysters, especially when you put some lemon on there and some salt and some sauce on there, some hot sauce. But eating in a contest, you know, it would be like 10 pounds of oysters, and it would be gross.
Okay, I hear you. What does a 75th hot dog taste like, Joey?
Oh, my God, it tastes like victory. I'm the only one person on the planet that's eating 75.
It tastes like victory. Well, we will be flying the W tonight, to use a Wrigley phrase, once we receive your video, Joey, of you doing what we saw in Yankee Stadium and either agreeing that this is, in fact, a good way to use a hot dog, even though you currently don't believe so, or it confirms your belief that this is a blasphemous use of a hot dog by consuming it as a beer, using it as a straw. I can't wait to see that tonight, Joey.
I'm going to give it a try.
Okay. Well, good luck on Labor Day. You're in one of the majors, right? One of the season's majors, the Buffalo Wing Fest.
Oh, yeah.
The Buffalo Wing Eating.
In Buffalo. Yeah, it's Sunday before Labor Day. It's Buffalo Wing Fest, Buffalo Wings. Last year, I lost by two wings.
Yeah, so Miko Sudo got you by two, right? You had 244. Right.
Unbelievable.
She ate 246. Yeah. My gosh. And then on September 24th, you're going to compete in the Case's Pork Roll Eating Championship in the seat of power of New Jersey, Trenton. And you're defending your title of 45 pork rolls in 10 minutes. Is that true? You got that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That one's, you only get pork roll in New Jersey, and it's actually pretty delicious.
Mm-hmm. And you're fresh off of a 32 24-ounce cups of popcorn in 8 minutes at a minor league baseball game. You set a record there, too. That just happened a couple of days ago.
Just last night, my mouth is still raw from it. All those kernels are actually
pretty good. I was going to ask, you got something in one of those back molars? It came up during this chat, maybe? I don't know.
I've lost twice since then, and things are still coming out.
Joey, I appreciate you taking the time here. And in advance, I look forward to seeing that video tonight. At Rich Eisen Show is all we ask. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
It sounds like we got this. We're
all right.
Do it.
We got it.
Yes.
We're going to be looking for it. Joey Chestnut here on the Rich Eisen Show is going to drink a beer through a hot dog at Wrigley Field tonight. You're welcome, Cubs fans. You're welcome. And somewhere, looking down from heaven, is Harry Carey saying, I wish I could do that.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's take a break. Let's go from this to Michael Mann.
What a segue.
Let's talk Heat. We'll talk Heat when we come back. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. That's true when your business is growing fast, and even more true when there's a lot of uncertainty. Inflation is running rampant. Supply chains are clogged, and the labor market is tight. What does that mean for margins? Well, not every business is in the dark. Over 31,000 businesses know their numbers because they use NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, planning, budgeting, and of course, inventory, so you can manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. NetSuite helps you identify rising costs as well, helps you automate your manual business processes and see where to save your money. Know your numbers, know your business, and get to know how NetSuite can be the source of truth for your entire company. Right now, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/richpod right now. netsuite.com/richpod. It's netsuite.com/richpod. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network, we all love the movie Heat. So when this book, Heat 2, came out and hit the bestseller list, we said to Michael Mann, would you like coming on the show? And he did exactly that from Italy, where he's on the set of his new movie, Ferrari, star-studded film. Here's my chat with the great Michael Mann. Joining me here on the Rich Eisen Show is a very busy man who is in the midst of a terrific year after directing the pilot episode of Tokyo Vice, which has been picked up for season 2 on HBO Max. But in addition to that, joining us from Italy, where he's directing his new film Ferrari, amidst having the number one book on planet Earth for best-selling novels, Heat 2, the director of Heat from back in the day and the author of Heat 2, Michael Mann. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I would definitely say you're doing well. I mean, you're having a terrific year. Congratulations on that.
Let me
just jump into it. Why Heat 2? You know, you wrote it with Meg Gardner, but why jump into this at this point of your career?
Well, it never really left me. I mean, I never the characters were vivid. They had vast lives before the events of the 1995 film. I was always fascinated about, you know, how to project them further into the evolving, transforming nature of professional organized crime. The way the world works in 95 is not the way the world works in, you know, 2022, or as far as that goes, 2000, when the sequel takes place, 2002. In other words, those patterns of transnational organized crime, for example, were emerging. The dark web was emerging in 2000, 2002. So, basically, in a word, the movie Heat is a slice of these lives. And there was a lot before, and there's a lot after. So, and what tends to happen when you go as deep into characters as I like to, and as the actors I work with like to, they really become alive. They become their own kind of living entities, and so you never really leave it.
And so, the story in the novel picks up where we left off, or at least part of the story does. There's flashbacks, and of course there's the present day as well, where Al Pacino's character Vincent Hanna is searching for Val Kilmer's character, who, as we all know, his wife gives him the high sign to not come upstairs at the end of Heat, and he ends up escaping. Is that a story that you've had in your brain ever since the end of Heat? Is that what you...
No, that part's new. What Heat makes reference to Hannah's work in Chicago in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it says he went after Frankie Yonder at one point, who was a home invader, not this home invader, not Wardell. And, you know, as I research other projects or you're working through things, you find arenas, whether it's Batam or Ciudad Leste, which we location scouted and did some shooting in the Miami Vice. And so all these things are kind of rattling around, and the idea of driving this story into it with particularly the Chehalis character, because Chehalis was postmodern. The Neil McCauley was very much a modernist kind of character. He had rules and regulations for himself, and if he deviated from them, the outcome was bad. He almost determined his own fate because he got spontaneous. And once he got spontaneous, he made the mistake of going for Wingrow, and that undid him, in effect. Chehalis just seems to skate on by. And so in that sense, he always felt to me very much like a character for the new millennium. And so the idea of Chehalis, and I can't divorce him from Val Kilmer in my mind, the idea of Chehalis moving forward into a whole new area where everything changes. When I say everything changes, it's like as good as these guys were in 1995, they were basically being 19th century bandits holding up banks. So the sophistication of what they did was no different than it could have been the 1880s. And you could have told the same story of bank robbers. But when you move into the new millennium, everything's different, you know, through the zeros and the odds. And to sort of bring this, push the stories into this, you know, exciting new world, this territory that to me is unexplored and very, very exciting, exactly for that reason.
Michael Mann, the director of Heat and now the author, co-author of the new top best-selling novel on planet Earth, atop the New York Times bestseller list, Heat 2, here on the Rich Eisen Show. So you are very well known for your research going into a film. And before I dive headfirst back into heat with you, I do want to ask you what you learned about Muhammad Ali that you perhaps didn't already know going into Ali in 2001, Michael Mann.
Everything. It was spending time with Muhammad. He was, you know, he was there during all of the pre-production, which went on for 8 months, all of the shooting that we did in the States because of the Parkinson's. He couldn't travel, or he'd have been in Africa as well, recreating that world. I mean, everybody's gone. Angela Dundee is gone. Howard Bingham is gone. But, you know, Howard Bingham, Angela Dundee, and Muhammad Ali, they, you know, working with them, we were able to build a world. And the role that Angela Dundee had, along with a couple of other terrific trainers and training Will, you know, becoming a boxer after 8 or 9 months of 5 days a week training in the gym we built. But the parts of Ali that I did know, even before I met him, had to do with the fact that I'm 1 year younger than he was. Mm-hmm. And what infuriated him in 1967 infuriated me and many other young men and women of my generation. So living through the 60s in particular, which is where we focus a lot, that's something we had in common. I'm not Black, I'm not African American. You know, I know the South Side of Chicago. To understand why he had a problem with his father painting white Jesus for a Black church, I get it. And that's the kind of understanding. It was difficult to get to, but that's the necessary voyage to try to understand. Put myself in Muhammad Ali's shoes and see through his eyes as much as I'm capable. But there were a lot of surprises along the way. He was very aware of Third World National Liberation Front struggles. Had to do with who the editor of the Nation of Islam was in the 60s, who happened to be very political and knew and wrote about those struggles. So it'd be so-and-so's haberdashery opened up on 64th Street on the front page, 3 pages in, it's about the struggle struggles in Angola and Mozambique. So the world that he was alive to and the bringing himself to who shall I was the heavyweight champion of the world. I'm representative, and how shall I be representative to my people? In effect, and then the expansion of that into everybody rising up from below. That journey for a quest for identity, the representation, that's. To me, that's what the movie was about, and spent a lot of time talking to him about that.
There was a beautiful movie. It was remarkable, and I'm just wondering, you've worked with so many all-time greats, Michael, and you've been there and you've done that, but what was it like for you to have Muhammad Ali walk into a room or you walk into his for the first time with his world, his story, and your care in your hands, and talk to him about that? What was your feeling walking into that room and having
it was awesome. I mean, it was extraordinary, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without Howard Bingham. Mm-hmm. And he was Ali was one of my all-time heroes. Sure. From early 60s, along with two other guys I want to work with, the American Indian Movement. It was hard to describe. It was quite extraordinary. And then Ali spoke very softly. Howard had a little bit of a stutter, and I had some difficulty hearing what Ali was saying. So the three of us together were saying conversations. But we met, I think, the first meeting I had with him, he was in Las Vegas. Yeah.
So let's get to a little bit of heat, if you don't mind. And on my program, we have a segment called Celebrity True or False, where I've culled things that have been written about either a person or a film. Right. And I've got some heat celebrity true or false that I'd like to hit. And you tell me what's true and what's not, if you don't mind, Michael Mann. We'll play that game with you right now.
Celebrity true or false?
You can't handle the truth.
First up for you is true or false. Heat was originally something that you created in the late 70s and wound up making originally or attempting to as a television series called L.A. Takedown. Is that true or false?
That's false. The Heat screenplay pre-existed L.A. Takedown. I extracted the L.A. Takedown script from Heat and thought about making a television series, but got into a disagreement about casting the lead. But I owned it, so I was able to retain all the rights.
And so what was the casting conundrum back in the day for television?
There was I was very, very close friends with Brandon Tartikoff, who ran NBC at the time. And there was one actor who I was interested in having play one role. And Brandon and I had a very friendly, amicable disagreement. And I decided, you know what, let's just leave it alone and not do the series.
And then so you just kept the script and is it true?
I retained the rights. And okay. But the Heat script that pre-existed, L.A. Takedown, didn't have the current Heat ending. And it wasn't until I discovered that ending that I was able to say, oh, this whole thing clicks in and I want to do it as a movie.
So how did you discover the Heat ending, Michael Mann?
Something analogous to hitting yourself on the head with a hammer for a long period of time, and then you finally... I get it. You know, it's just, it had to do with that last image and the fact and the idea of counterpoint or like a fugue in music where that De Niro's character, Neil McCauley, is riding out of existence into death and is fortunate enough to be in contact with the only other person in his universe, who understands him as completely, and that also one at the same time is also the man who killed him, and that both are true and both are there at 100%, and so that then gave me the idea that I want to be when I'm with Hannah, I want him to apprehend McCauley 100%. When I'm with McCauley, I want him to evade Hannah 100%. And then the challenge, can you make all that happen at the same time and then take audience and move them from each character? And every time you're with that particular character, you are empathetically completely connected to that character, even though in regards to story or plot, they're totally oppositional. They have oppositional ambitions to each other. What they want in the world of the film is completely in contradiction to other characters you're also empathetically connected to. So that structure was very exciting, a very exciting challenge for me. And it came from the end image, then reverse engineered back into the rest of the screenplay via rewriting.
And so if it's not a challenge enough, you decided to shoot it at LAX at night with planes landing. How did you come up with that? And what were the logistical, I guess, trappings that you had to run there?
One additional trapping was there was also the week the Unabomber threatened to blow up LAX.
Come on.
No, really. And then to really put total coincidence to work, the person who obviously had a role in dealing with the Unabomber and discovering his location was Lowell Bergman from The Insider.
From The Insider?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is, you can't make that up.
No.
So who did you have to run that through to say, hey, I want to shoot something with planes flying overhead? And I imagine that you didn't have an unlimited time frame in which to shoot that, Michael Mann, right?
Well, we had a fantastic location manager who I still work with, who I just had a meeting with about 25 minutes ago. Janice Pauly managed to get us permission to shoot on the approach to the runways. And then when the Unabomber threatened to blow up LAX, she worked magic and we were able to still shoot there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Next one for you in, Heat celebrity, true or false, Michael Mann. The Pacino De Niro diner scene was raw, done at De Niro's suggestion without any rehearsal before you shot it on set. Is that true or false?
That's false. When we were in pre-production and we were doing rehearsals, all of us were of a mind that, no, you don't rehearse this scene. This scene, particularly artists like Al and Bob, the worst thing you could possibly do was rehearse a scene like that, feel you nailed it in a rehearsal. You'll never get back to that when you're shooting. And so you want magic to happen when you're actually not just filming it, but when you're filming it and you work towards that groove where it's going to happen and take 5, 6, 7, or 8, something like that. You don't want it to happen on take one because there could be a technical flaw or something wrong with the camera. So, you know, film is wonderful. What I love about it is that selection you win with one vote. You know, if you have one great take, that's it. That's the gem. And it'll never quite be that way again. So you're looking for it to be so real and magical and immediate and spontaneous. And so you don't ruin it by over rehearsing a scene like that. So what we did is we discussed about the scene. We didn't actually, you know, run it. And if anybody spoke the lines, it was kind of in a robotic monotone. Nobody was putting anything into it because we all wanted to do it, you know, that once, something like one time.
How did you get Pacino and De Niro to do it, to do Heat?
I met Al because Jimmy Kahn introduced me to him after we did Thief. I didn't know Bob very well. Art Linson did. And then Bob and I met a couple times and, you know, they had never really worked together in the same film at the same time. And they read the script and yes was the answer. And, you know, and then we put together what became, I think, a spectacular ensemble cast. And everybody, it was like an ensemble company. Val would show up on days he wasn't working to see what Bob or Al was doing. And John Voight was considered as significant and on exactly the same stellar plane as Bob and Al, you know, and that was the feeling around the making of the film. It was quite wonderful.
And then a future Oscar winner and Natalie Portman as the daughter. I mean, right. when you take a look back at it now, also the cast actually is even better than I guess or more accomplished now when you look back at it.
Dennis Haysbert, Michael T. Williamson, right. I mean, it's, you know, who's a close friend, you know, it's
a couple more here for you, Michael, man. True or false, to prepare for the film.
Michael T. Williamson's Don King is brilliant. It's a brilliant turn in Ali.
Yes. Oh, no, he's terrific. I mean, he's as terrific as they come. To prepare for the film's climactic bank heist scene, De Niro, Kilmer, and Tom Sizemore, you had him case a bank in Century City with the permission of bank security and then made them recount from memory the layout once they left. Is that true or false?
That's true.
What did that accomplish in your mind?
Well, you can't imagine the tension that any of us would have if you're armed. They were unloaded weapons, but they had the gear that they were wearing in the actual bank robbery, which meant they had a suit over a vest and they had unloaded weapons, and they just to walk into a bank like that, the tension is extraordinary. And they were there to do a job. They were there to say where the security guards were standing, where the cameras were, how they would go in, if they had to get out, where the more than one exit or two or three exits, and basically case the bank. And the like I said, we did this with the full knowledge of the bank officers, or they weren't, you know.
But there were potentially patrons in this bank that day depositing or removing or just conducting their bank business. And they look up and there's Robert De Niro, Tom Sizemore, and Val Kilmer looking like they're casing a bank, if not getting set to knock it off.
You wouldn't recognize them because with sunglasses and everything else that they had on and a hat, you wouldn't recognize it as De Niro. It wouldn't have been tense for anybody in the bank. It was very tense if you're Bob or Vale or Sizemore.
Did they get the memory of the layout proper? Did they nail it?
Yes.
They're top-notch actors. Okay, and then last one for you. I'm friends with Hank Azaria. He told me this story, so I guess I know it's true, that in the scene where Pacino basically, you know, cajoled him and told him that the jig was up for him and he's not going to start working for Hannah, that Hank had no idea that Pacino was going to talk the way that he did and the line that he did, this famous line, and Hank's reaction of the word Jesus was legit, and that's the scene that you kept in the film. That's true.
That's true. We had we would do things. I mean, Al is fantastic, and we would. He would typically, his takes that were great takes that became prints were always like 5, 6, or 7. 5, 6, or 7. He'd hit the zone, and that's where all the great takes were. 5, 6, or 7, right. And then we do maybe do another one, take 8, and then he said, "Let me do a wild one," and that became a shorthand for Al just basically unplug. And sometimes it would be outrageous and absolutely terrible, and sometimes it would be absolutely brilliant, because he wouldn't know what was going to happen. And when we were probably 110 days into 120 days shoot by that point, and so everybody was kind of a little bit worn out. It didn't occur to me that this was Hank. This was Azaria's first day on the show. I should explain to him that what we're doing. Can I do it? Well, yeah, sure, go ahead. So Hank had no idea what was coming. Either did I. Either did Al. But that's what that came in.
Al didn't know that line about the great ass. He didn't know that was coming.
No, he didn't. Not necessarily that was. You know, some of that was scripted, but how exactly explosive it was going to become was a big surprise.
All right. Well, before I let you go, since you're very busy on the set of Ferrari with a remarkable cast, Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz, Shailene Woodley, just to name three, are you yourself surprised by the success of Heat 2, Michael?
I'm really gratified. It was a real push to bring these stories into the worlds that it goes into, and everywhere from the bottom levels of street life in LA to the Straits of Malacca, Batam, and transnational crime, and the beginning of the dark web and its significance. Because romance and the delivery of Val's character of Shaherless into completion as a human being. De Niro's Macaulay and Al's Hannah are total self-contained characters. They are arrived into their identity, and in the sequel part of this, so too does Chris Shaherless, played by Val Kilmer in the original, arrive into a total complete man, a total complete individual in his romance with a very, very unusual woman, Anna Liu, who's based on somebody I met in Ciudad del Este when we were shooting Miami Vice.
Is there, I guess I'm mandated to ask, I'm sure you get this question a lot, is this, you're going to make a movie out of this at some point? What do you think?
I'd love to, yeah.
Okay.
That's the
I mean, that would be great. You talked to Pacino about it? Have you talked to Al about it already?
I'm thinking about it, but this is the wrong time to be talking about who I'm thinking about.
Okay, sounds good. All right, got it. I know the most difficult part about writing a book is selling it. So I appreciate you taking the time out of another film that you're doing in Italy, which I can't wait to see, Ferrari. I know you were a part of Ford versus Ferrari as well. So clearly this is something that interests you as well, yeah. Michael. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you got cooking up. And I appreciate you giving me the time here, sir.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Thanks
so much. You bet. All That's right. Michael Mann right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
What a great chat, man.
That was awesome.
For Heat fans, that is right straight up your alley, sir.
That's great.
And ladies, let's take a break. We'll unpack a little bit of what we just heard. Shams Charania will join us to talk about what's going on with the Heat on the Nets. Chrome Soft, the Chrome Soft family of golf balls. There is a Chrome Soft that is out there for you that suits your game. I use the Chrome Soft, the regular Chrome Soft is what it is called, because it suits so many different types of games. I'm not the greatest golfer. I'm part of that wide range of golfers who want a better feel, more distance, incredible forgiveness. That's what I need. And I truly can feel the difference hitting this golf ball than another one. Let's just say I only have one Chrome Soft on the tee. I might have one of those tape delays swing and slice one into somebody's backyard.
Bad news.
And somebody flips me another golf ball that's not a Chrome Soft and I'll hit it. I can tell the difference. And I'm not an expert at it. If you're a better player, there is the Chrome Soft X that provides excellent spin consistency, tour-level short game control. The Chrome Soft XLS is a lower spin golf ball on longer shots. You can feel a firmer feel, and you get more high spin around the greens if you're expert at this. And so there's a Chrome Soft that's right for you. When you add it all up, it's pretty simple. Chrome Soft is better for the best and better for everyone. Find out which Chrome Soft is right for you at CallawayGolf.com/ChromeSoft. What a great chat with Michael, man. I could have gone in so many different directions. Anybody who's a fan of Heat, if you missed it, go to our YouTube stream that you're maybe watching us on, YouTube.com/RichEisenShow. We'll post the whole interview there as soon as this show is over. So that was some neat stuff right there. And coming up at top of hour number three, Sham Sharania will join us. One of the top basketball information men in the business. What did the Nets say to Kevin Durant to have him just say, okay, that trade demand, I'm rescinding it. And there's a partnership now. They call it a partnership, which is interesting because normally it's like, you know, you play basketball for us and we will pay you as part of management. But they're talking about partnership. Is that what helped sweeten the pot for him? So we'll talk about that with Shams and then Devin McCourty of the Patriots and you, if you want to join us, hour three. So here we are still on our YouTube stream. Just us chickens, as our terrestrial radio audience is now listening to some very important commercials.
Pay them bills.
I know you asked something about Heat that I didn't ask him, right? That you heard something about. You said something the other day. I wish I'd asked him.
Oh, in the true or false? Is it about
that Hannah had a drug habit that cut out of the movie entirely?
Yeah, so I had heard the reason why he's so kind of high strung and unpredictable. Yeah, right. That, like, he was supposed to be on like cocaine basically the whole movie, and they kind of scrapped that from the editing
film.
Yeah, which kind of explains some of his outbursts.
Some of his outbursts.
There's a ton of them, obviously, like the scene with Tone Loke, and then the great ass scene. Like
another one I didn't get to is apparently the Chehalis character played by Val Kilmer. They asked Keanu Reeves first,
and
he said no because he was playing Caesar and. In a play, yeah.
Oh, wow. The Chris character also had a huge gambling problem, which is part of why he couldn't walk away. I wish they would have gotten more into that. But I had also heard they shot every scene on location somewhere in Los Angeles. No sound stages used for the whole movie.
I was thinking that, too. Like, what are some of the greatest Los Angeles-based movies? Heat has got to be one of them.
It's way up there, yeah.
Right?
L.A. Confidential.
Sunset Boulevard. I know you don't watch anything in black and white, Chris.
Die Hard, obviously.
Die Hard is absolutely.
A recent one wasn't
shot at the North Pole? I'm sorry. I'm confused. What else?
It literally takes place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
The recent movie, McConaughey, Lincoln Lawyer. That's a great LA movie.
Naked Gun?
Naked Gun.
How about Friday?
LA movie.
Friday's a great one.
Okay.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Any other good LA movies that we're forgetting?
Well, Friday 2. Friday Friday.
where LA is Friday, kind of is kind of a star of the movie as well, What, Down and Out in LA, right? What, 8 Days in the Valley? Is that another one?
2 Days in the Valley.
2 Days in the Valley? Yeah. I forget how many days there are.
Two. Charlize Theron makes it feel like it's a month, though.
It's
Mulholland Drive, right? That's
La La Land.
La La Land is a great one.
Chinatown.
That won the Oscar for like 5 seconds.
I think it was more like 15 seconds. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a couple-minute break
Pulp
here.
Pulp Fiction. Like, how can we forget that one? It just popped in my head.
Pulp Fiction. That's right. Yeah. Fiction. Zed's dead, baby.
Valley movie.
All right, somebody's privileges were revoked, right?
Yeah, not any of ours.
We'll take a break right here on the Rich Eisen Show. When we come back, Shams Charania will tell us what happened with the Nets. The senior NBA insider from The Athletic and Stadium will join us in just a couple minutes' time. Stick with us, please.
for the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments. It's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.